Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to join the conversation. Well, the Giants end their season on a high note. They defeat the Washington Redskins at MetLife Stadium 20-6 in a dreadful rainy day where the offenses were both seemingly in a bit of a funk. No one could do a whole lot in that rain, but the Giants do enough defensively to get the win 20-6. We continue to get a breakout performance at the end of the season by Jarrell Jernigan. Justin Tuck finishes the Giants season, and who knows what happens in the offseason, perhaps his Giants career, playing an excellent football game against the run and against the pass. Tremaine McBride has a show-me type of game playing cornerback, having a couple of interceptions. And Lance, the Giants finished the year winning 7 of their last 10 ball games, which is not a bad run. And they go into the offseason at least feeling pretty good about how they closed out their year.
Well, specifically from a defensive perspective, I think there's a lot that they could build upon. They've been able to get to quarterback down the stretch of the season, which was a real good sign. They've been able to stop some of the top running backs in the NFL consistently. Those are the two trends that I take away. And at times, they've been an opportunistic group. They had 4 takeaways in yesterday's game. However, on the flip side, from an offensive perspective, yes, they did win 7 of their final 10 games, John, but I think there's just as many question marks with the offense late in the season as there were early in the season.
Yeah, and quite frankly, they still never even put a complete game together in those wins. And like you said, the defense played well, but it comes down to figuring out how to get this offense fixed in the offseason. And really, we saw what happened in this game kind of encapsulate the entire season. And we talked about it all year. If you were going to keep allowing your quarterback Eli Manning to get hit like this, eventually he was going to get hit in the wrong way and he was going to get hurt. And that happened in the game yesterday, spraining his ankle. Luckily, it's the last game of the year, so he will be back and ready to go in the offseason workout program, all that type of stuff, which is great. But it just really underscores the need in the offseason to get some improvement on the offensive line. And let's see what's going to happen with Will Beatty now. He got diagnosed with a fractured leg. I'm sure more tests are going to be run today. We'll see if there's any damage with that knee as well. But for now, just a fractured leg. If that's the case, again, it depends on the severity of the fracture and all that type of stuff. But you'd figure he'll be back at some point next year. But does that open up yet another hole now on the offensive line that you need to address? You have to find 3 or 4 new starters instead of maybe 2 or 3.
Well, you need depth. I think that's the one thing that they learned from this season. Plus, you don't know how quickly Beatty's going to be able to bounce back. Whenever you're talking about a leg injury, that involves rehab, surgery, so there's going to be a lot of question marks surrounding Will Beatty heading into the offseason. So I don't really think it changes the approach of the Giants entering the offseason, because the bottom line is we knew they needed to address multiple positions. However, now all of a sudden, where you thought maybe you had some depth at left tackle, now you may need to bring in an additional tackle, especially if Beatty's not ready to go for minicamp or OTAs.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Of course, this is one of those days at the facility here that is somewhat depressing, because a lot of guys will be walking out of this building. You don't know who's going to be walking out of the building for the final time. A lot of guys that have been here for a very long time, like David Deal and Justin Tuck. Other guys that are recent additions but really feel like they're part of the fabric of the franchise, like a John Beeson. You're going to have Tom Coughlin's goodbye press conference. You're going to have Jerry Reese's season wrap-up press conference, and we'll see what type of information they give in terms of the roster, personnel, perhaps front office coaching staff type of stuff. So those are all things that we'll find out later on today when Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese meet the media, Lance. And look, before the year, we sat here and we listened to Jerry Reese as he said the Giants have not made the playoffs in 3 out of 4 seasons. That is unacceptable. The Super Bowl here in February, it's our goal to be a part of that game. The Giants don't make the playoffs again. Obviously, they do not make the Super Bowl again. And you're looking at 4 to 5 years of not making the postseason. And it's a matter of the Giants trying to figure out a way to turn the corner here and become a playoff team once again, and maybe become a consistent playoff team for the first time in this Eli Manning era.
Well, the personnel has to change, John. They've got to bring in guys that are going to be able to contribute, and not necessarily in one facet of the game. special teams, offense, defense, all across the board. I don't think there were enough playmakers on this team this year. Difference makers, guys that can enter a game and you know at any given moment the ball can bounce in your favor or you can make a game-changing type of play. They were lacking that type of consistency.
And Tom Coughlin likes to call that playing above the X's and O's, and we've had that in the past where Akeem Nicks catches the Hail Mary in the playoffs. Victor Cruz catches the 9-yard pass against the Jets, breaks two tackles, runs for a touchdown. And you're right, you simply did not have enough of those plays this year, and a lot of that has to do with protecting your quarterback, giving him time to throw it. We talked about the offensive line. That's obviously priority number one, but I think probably priority either number two or three has to be the wide receiver position. Akeem Nicks is a free agent. He got injured again in this final game, another quiet game for him, except for that one deep pass he caught down the field. The Giants will have to make a decision on him, and they're going to have to figure out how they want to use Jarrell Jernigan here. His greatest strength is playing out of the slot. That's Victor Cruz's spot as well. Can you play Cruz outside more, use Jernigan in the slot, and maybe slide Ruben Randall in outside? Is that good enough? We'll see, but that's a question. Tight end's a question. Running back's a question. So they're going to have to do a lot of work in free agency and the draft.
And on defense, you want to try to keep the group together because of the fact that they were able to come through with decent numbers on a daily basis and also a weekly basis. But, you know, depending on how the fight out, they may not be able to keep everyone. So there's a lot of decisions that the Giants are going to have to make over the course of this offseason. And free agency, depending on what they do in free agency, that will obviously dictate what they do in the draft. Priority number one is look at what's out there on the market, look at your own free agents, and once the Giants all of a sudden start to round out the roster, then we'll all have a better idea of what direction they're going to go when it comes to the draft, because I'm sure a lot of you are going to call up, and you've done in previous weeks, hey, offensive linemen, I want to see them draft two or three offensive linemen right off the bat. If they go through free agency, they bring in two offensive linemen, the needs change all of a sudden in those first two rounds. You don't necessarily need to go after an offensive line.
And to me, what you do in free agency, you balance out your roster enough so you have the freedom in the draft to pick the best players when they're there. The last thing you want to do is go into a draft and say, oh crap, we have to have two guys at this position or we're in bad shape.
You start to reach.
Because then you reach. And then you get players that maybe aren't very good. So that's what the Giants, I think, need to avoid in doing free agency, is put themselves in a position where there is no dire need or we're in deep you-know-what come 2014.
Especially the fact that they haven't had a great deal of success in the draft. So the last thing you want to do is reach early in the rounds, because then all of a sudden those are not going to pan out, and there's been just as many question marks in rounds 3 through 7.
All right, we already got a full bank of phones. Let's go to them and start with Alan in Miami. Alan, good morning. How are you, sir?
Morning, guys. How's everybody going?
We're doing well, Alan. How about yourself? Happy New Year.
Pretty good. So two things. You know, with all the drama that's been going on in the NFL lately, I think it's a testament to Tom Coughlin and just his philosophy and the leadership on this team for them to not give up on this season, to still fight, even when they got eliminated when they lost to Dallas, and still finish off the season 7-3. I mean, I'm pretty proud to look and say, hey, we finished 7-9, as opposed to looking at a team like Washington that went 3-13 and some other teams out there. So, I mean, that alone, to me, you know, Tom Coughlin's job should never, ever be in question.
Second, and it's not. I mean, it's not.
Being here in Miami, I'm from New York, spent 26 years there, moved down here for grad school. You know, still love my Giants, obviously. This is New York. It's New York. We got to, in free agency, we got to get a big guy now. Got to get a guy like an Eric Decker. I mean, somebody to bring in a big-name receiver. I mean, we just need to have that big splash. I mean, we had that splash when we brought in Plaxico, and we saw how well that worked. And had he not gotten that accident, we probably would have had a chance to go back-to-back that year. We were 12-4 with the one seed that year.
Yep.
Beat Arizona and Pittsburgh on the road, and those are the two teams that played in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, we got to make that big wide receiver splash. And offensive line, a big, tough guy. I mean, Ralph Facchiano had a really good article today and said, you want a really big, nasty guy. And to me, you got to get that kid from Alabama. All those linemen that come out of Alabama, Nick Saban gets those big, strong guys. They run the ball well. Every running back that they've ever had there is just a monster. So, you know, with that 12th pick, I think we got to try to get that kid from Alabama. And if we got to move up or do something, we just have to just make a splash and just be out there and really, you know, get our names back out there and make people want to say, hey, I want to come play for the Giants. I want to play with Eli Manning. I want to compete in New York. I want to play with Eli Manning. And I think if we can do those things, considering how we finished the season, the defense looks pretty strong again, I think we can have a good 2014.
Well, this is not necessarily an offseason where they need to rebuild, Alan, so I think you're right. I think they have some pieces in place. It's a matter of rounding out the roster with some quality talent so that you could be a more consistent team. And as you pointed out, you've got to address this offensive line. I don't know necessarily if all the heavy lifting is going to be done in the draft, as you mentioned. You threw out the kid from Alabama, and Alabama has produced a number of good players. DJ Fluker's one to mention, who went to the San Diego Chargers.
Though Chance Warmack had a very poor rookie year as opposed to a guy like Fluker, and Womack was picked very high, and that Titans offensive line had some issues the entire year.
And with Alabama, especially when you look at some of the running backs that have come out of there, Alan, sometimes it's the system more than so the individual talent. So you always need to keep that in mind as well.
I hear you, but I mean, the last point, I mean, you can't coach 6'5 through 20. You can. And
no,
you look at their line, they're all a bunch of monsters. And I know in the NFL that's a dime a dozen, but still, I think we can get a big, strong kid that's used to just running. You know, that they run the football in Alabama. And if you have a lineman that's his mentality, and they know that defensive tackle, that defensive end in front of him, I'm going to knock him on his butt, and we're going to get these yards. I think that's the kind of guy that we need to bring in. My last question would be, as with many fans, we don't understand the cap, how it works. I mean, realistically, and I'll hang up, I mean, how much money do we have to spend going forward in free agency?
You know, a lot of it's going to depend on what they do in terms of renegotiating a lot of these contracts. I'm sure our man NYG Cap Central has a running tab online. I'll look at that. And what I'm going to do over the next couple of days, so by the end of the week or by early next week, I'll have a working number that you guys can work off of to judge exactly how much money the Giants are going to have to spend. But it's going to be enough to make the moves you need to make. But again, you got guys like David Boss. You got guys like Chris Knee that you can let go. You got guys like Anchor Roll who you can maybe extend and spread that money out. Eli Manning's a $20 million cap hit. Do you extend him and renegotiate that and get that money spread out? So depending on how those things go is going to really affect what the Giants' actual cap number is. Now, we have an idea of what it is, but I don't want to throw out a number and then it's going to be wrong. So I'm going to do some work over the next couple of days over the holiday, and hopefully by the end of the week or early next week, I'll have what I consider a fairly definitive number based on the people on the roster and things of that nature. And I want to go back to your offensive line point, Adams. I thought it was a good one. And size is great, 6'5", 320, I agree. That's all important. But I want the guy with the mentality that I think this offensive line has been missing a little bit with some of their guys. I want the guy that wants to go in there, crave contact, maul somebody, brings his lunch pail to work every day, carries himself with a lot of pride, likes the battle in the trenches, is going to be like a David Deal who you need to basically cut off his leg for him not to play. I want that type of guy in there to bring back that ruggedness and blue-collar work ethic of the Giants' offensive lines that were so good in that 2008 era. Thanks for the call, Alan.
All right, I appreciate it. And they're going to need to get somebody like that, who you just laid out. Somebody with those characteristics, somebody with those qualities. But, you know, John, I go back to the track record and the trends that we've seen within this organization. And more often than not, they've done better when they've brought in some free agents as opposed to try to stockpile with rookies. Now, they need to get younger on the offensive line. So I'm not saying that you avoid offensive line through the draft, but if they're looking for a difference maker, an immediate guy that could come in, I think they got to have a better luck if they bring in a free agent or two versus bringing in two or three rookies. Because just like we saw with Justin Pugh, and Pugh, I think, finished up with a quality season. I don't think you could have asked for more out of what they got out of Justin Pugh, given the fact that he was thrown right into the mix once David Deal went down with that injury very early in the season with thumb surgery. You're going to have your fair share of ups and downs when it comes to a rookie. There's going to be that transitional phase. They're going to have to buy into a new system. You hope that they don't have any setbacks, whether it be injury or learning the playbook. So I think that Giants are in a position where you need an experienced veteran who's going to come in, understand the playbook, and be able to protect Eli Manning. And therefore, I think you want to bring in at least two free agents, round out the rest of your depth, maybe get at least one starter through the draft. But I don't know if the best direction is get two or three starters via the draft. I think you need a good balance between youth and veteran experience. And they're starting to build with some youth in a guy like Justin Pugh. And even maybe if they bring back, you know, Brandon Mosley, for example, if they have him play somewhat of a role next season, he's still relatively young. But I think you need to shore up your holes with guys, like you said, hard workers, bring their lunchbox to work each day, but have that veteran experience more so than you're going to look to a guy that needs a year or two to hone and refine his skills.
201-939-4513. Again, according to our guy, NYG Cap Central on Twitter, this is not official. He is the Giants down for about 110 $1 million of spending right now in terms of the cap next year. And I think the cap came in 2013, what, like $125 million, something like that. So, again, that's about $15 million you're looking at. And then depending on what they do with some of those other contracts, you might be able to free up some more space as well. 201-939-4513. Mo's in Montclair, New Jersey. Mo Manning, what's going on, pal?
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, watching yesterday's game, I think, was a true testament to just, you know, Giants football, just battling. It was very depressing for me personally, seeing Eli go down. I was upset with the O-line, started to curse at my television. But watching these interviews and these press conferences, hearing these players talk so highly about certain individuals whose future is up for grabs, you know, does management pay attention to that? And do you think they consider, you know, players' opinions on, you know, the value towards the team collectively?
You mean asking players for their opinions as to who should stay and who should go? Is that what you're touching on?
Yeah, like hearing Antrell Roland and John Beeson, I heard some guys ask about Coughlin, and they mentioned Tuck, and just hearing them talk so highly about these guys and their leadership and the way they, you know, show up to work every day. Does leadership take that into consideration, and actually when they see it on tape, do you think that I hope not they don't get rid of Coughlin and Tuck? And I just hope it'll all work out.
Well, they're not going to get rid of Tom Coughlin. I think based on how the season finished, based on his track record, the fact that he helped bring two Super Bowls, I don't think there's any coaching question in terms of the head coach here right now.
The only way Tom Coughlin goes anywhere is if Tom Coughlin decides he wants to retire. And I, frankly, would be blown away, shocked, super surprised if that happens.
With respect to Justin Tuck, I think they value leadership within this organization, because it's one of those things that doesn't show up on the box score, what John Beeson brought to the team. But you have to find the right balance, and you don't want to overpay a guy just because they bring leadership to the table.
Hey, look, Lance, we talked about this, and Mo, I think this is what you really have to look at. Is another team going to come in, whether it's a Beeson, a Tuck, a Linville Joseph, even a Terrell Thomas, you could throw him into that mix. Is another team going to step in, even a Keem Nicks, and throw the bank at these guys? Because the Giants aren't going to overpay. And if somebody comes in and says to John Beeson, look, here's $45 million over, you know, 6 years or something like that, the Giants aren't going to match that. And John Beeson's going to go bye-bye. And if someone comes in and offers Tuck 4 years, $20 million, guess what? He's probably going to walk too, because I don't think the Giants will match that. Same with Linville Joseph. If he gets a, you know, four-year, $28 million contract, I don't think the Giants are going to be able to match that financially either. We have about $10 million in cap space. That's one of the estimates that's out there, depending on how they handle a lot of these other contracts. They could get more. So the Giants really have to be careful in how they spend their money in the offseason.
Okay, and touching on the draft, hearing you guys talk about the draft, how much does the draft play in a GM's, you know, in a GM's role, you know, how the upper management views them on whether they should, you know, keep or fire them? Like, how important is the draft to a GM's, you know, to his quality?
It's everything.
The way they view him.
It's everything. I mean, if you're an NFL team, the only way you can be successful is if you build through the draft. Every team in the NFL that's a good franchise and a good football team drafts well. If you don't draft well, you can't win. With the salary cap structure the way it is, you have to have good, cheap talent on your team, and you do that by drafting players. Eventually, those players will leave in free agency when another team offers too much money that the team that drafted them can't afford. It happens. But you have to draft good young players to complement your higher-priced veterans. Otherwise, you simply will not have enough talent to win. And remember, Jerry Reese is a draft guy. So, yeah, is Mark Ross doing a lot of the legwork in terms of being the director of college scouting? Sure. But Jerry Reese makes the ultimate decision. And in terms of getting players and talent in the draft, I can only speak for this place. It's a huge, huge part of how you judge the success of a general manager.
Mo, you look at the New England Patriots, who have a very good track record
in terms of Seattle
this season and even previous seasons. You look at all their defensive starters, 8 of the 11, 3rd through 6th rounds they were selected.
Baltimore, an excellent drafting team as well.
Right, right. And you know, lastly, I just want to make a point, then I have a question. I think that, you know, next year I'll expect to see maybe 3 or 4 starting rookies. I don't know. That's just the way I feel. But, you know, the last time we spoke, you know, I mentioned the MVP. Who do you guys feel is most improved? Because, you know, I've played high school football. I didn't receive MVP. But, you know, most improved was pretty important to me. So who do you feel was most improved on this offense or defense, you know, however you guys see it.
All right, Mo, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it. Most improved this year. I mean, you have to consider Will Hill in that conversation. I think, do you have to consider Drell Jernigan in that conversation now, too, the way he's ended the season? He could be in the mix there.
Would have probably liked to see a little bit more games, but he didn't have many opportunities early on.
I mean, Prince took a step forward. Was he that much better this year than he was second half of last year? I mean, maybe slight improvement. I mean, comeback player of the year, I think maybe you're looking at probably Justin Tuck in that scenario. He's had an excellent year.
It's a good
year,
title for him.
Obviously. Most improved, huh? I think those are the guys that are in the mix. Nobody really on offense, I think, can fit into that category.
I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily Antrel Roll's been playing at a high level. However, he's been back in his comfort zone this season, so do you want to maybe throw him slightly in the category?
But maybe, but
comeback
he's been
player
good
of the year, he's been good too, exactly.
You know, Terrell Thomas is actually would probably have to be the
comeback
player.
Yeah, absolutely.
He'd have to be, coming off those three ACLs.
But improved, I probably would say Prince and Will Hill.
And Tuck, I think you got to put Tuck in the mix. He had a few years where he had down
seasons. Injuries
and
everything.
Yeah. By his own admission, he's had down years, and you know, double-digit sacks. It's only the second time his career's had double-digit sacks.
What about Reuben Randle? Would have liked to seen a little bit more consistency out of him other than that six-game stretch.
I would have liked it. Let me put it this way. If before the season I told you Reuben Randle would have had the season that he had, what would have been your reaction? I would have liked to see a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought the same thing.
Based on how he finished up last season and then the flashes that he showed early this year and given all the injuries and the down year for Akeem Nicks, Victor Cruz being double-teamed, I would think the opportunities presented themselves for Reuben Randle to take it to a whole other level. However, with that being said, you need to take into consideration clearly the offensive line issues and the fact that Eli Manning did not have a typical Eli Manning season. So all that thrown into the mix, it's understandable why Reuben Randle did have his fair share of ups and downs.
Let's go to Tim in Jackson, New Jersey, real quick. Tim, what's going on?
Nothing. I got a question. Well, the Giants re-signed John Beeson, Kevin Booth, Andre Brown, Jim Cotto, Mark Herzlitz, the Paysingers, Justin Tuck, and signed Jermichael Finley, Nick Folk, Ted Ginn, Brent Grimes, Maurice Jones-Drew, Bernard Pollard, and Dominic Hardy.
Well, Tim, you listed the whole NFL this morning. Jeez.
And thanks for the call,
appreciate
Tim.
Appreciate the phone call. Haven't heard from Tim in a while.
No, we haven't. It's good to hear from Tim.
He threw out a lot of names.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know where you want to start.
Let's talk about the guys on the roster. I think that's probably the best way to attack it. And one guy he mentioned, Jermichael Finley. Let's see if his NFL career is even going to continue with that injury he suffered this year. So we'll see what happens with him.
Blocking also. Keep that in mind.
You
got to block if you're going to come to this team at that spot.
No question about it. And, boy, I think Kevin Booth has a good chance of being back, whether it's as a starter or a swing guy. We'll see who else they can get in free agency in the draft. John Beeson. We'll see how much money he wants. I know the Giants would like him to be back. I know John Beeson likes it here. But, again, the financials have to work out in that regard. But if you talk to every player on this team, Lance, they talk about where this defense turned around. They talk about, A, Perryfield making adjustments on defense, and they talk about John Beeson coming here and changing this entire leadership aspect on that Giants defense.
Well, they were missing that, I think, entering this season at that spot. They lost Chase Blackburn, and most people said, okay, they lost Chase Blackburn. They could find a talented linebacker to replace him. It's not a big problem. However, look at what Chase brought in the classroom. You know, those things sometimes get overlooked. And once again, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier in the show. You don't pay a guy just because he brings that to the table. That's not a wise business decision. But you need to take it into consideration because you need to determine if we let Beeson walk, can we find the guy that can also bring what he brought to the table?
Right, and talking to Justin Tuck on the pregame radio show, did a great interview with him. He really gave a lot of good stuff. He talked about how having a guy in the middle of the defense to be the leader is important because with the role in the secondary and Tuck on the line, it's hard for those guys to really communicate to each other over the course of the game because they're physically so far away from each other. Having Beeson in the middle there and that second level of defense being the leader really made a difference.
Well, every level of the defense has a different view of the offense.
Right.
So, like you said, the linebacker's got a different perspective than the guy on the line and the guy in the secondary. That's why it is important to have that communicator in the middle.
201-939-4513. And, Tim, call back and just try to, you know, give me some individual players next time. Don't just start listing rosters. Let's go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing well, Drew. How you been?
Great, man. Excuse me, great, man. First and foremost, man, before I forget, let me talk about Beeson for a second, man. Because I agree with you guys to a certain extent. I said this before. I think Beeson brought a lot of passion and heart to a team, and that you can't pay for. You can't buy. You can't get that in the draft or whatever. You know, you could pay a guy as much money if you want, but if they don't have the heart or passion, it means nothing.
And he does have that in spades, no question.
Right. So from that standpoint, I really like Beason, because I think, you know, to me, one of the things that I felt like this team lacked, you know, in recent years really was leadership. Now, this is why, to me, this is why one of the reasons that I really love Antrell Rowe, you know, and he's one of my favorite players on the team, in terms of, because I love his passion. You know, you can really tell that guy, he hates losing. He hurts when plays aren't made or whatever, and I like that. And I think, you know, I think teams need a sprinkling of that. You need a passionate player that's going to whip guys in the shape and get them out there to work.
No question.
And again, you know, I mean, we had this conversation last week. You know, no matter how you look at it, you know, as to whether Beason was MVP or not, and my argument was, you know, look what this guy brought from a passion side, leadership side.
Now, Drew, that's true, but there is another side to Beason. And while the leadership and the passion was great, and his work against the run was also fantastic, he had a lot of issues, especially in the second half of the season in coverage. He is not a good coverage linebacker.
No. And actually, you took my point from me. You just took that point from me. I mean, because that's what I was going to say. As well as Beason has brought his passion and everything, yes, he does have some holes. And so from that standpoint, yes, that is going to have to be addressed. Me personally, I would like to see Beason come back. But on the flip side, which is exactly what you just pointed out, he does have some deficiencies, and they showed up.
And that's why the economics have to be right. That's why you can't break the bank for him, because he's not that complete player that's going to be a three-down player for you.
Definitely agree. Definitely agree with that. So, you know, I just want them to say that with regards to Beason. In terms of yesterday's game, you know, I watched the whole game, and, you know, it was comical at times. What I really liked about this team, you know, for the first time in a while, I actually saw some passion on the Giants, okay? You know, you actually saw those guys going out there, and they wanted to win this game. Whatever it took, they wanted to win this game. Now, once again, yeah, we didn't play the greatest team in the world, okay? We played Washington. You know, you got another, you know, subpar quarterback. But, you know, with the weather conditions and everything, I think it kind of equalized a lot of things. And you just saw the Giants. They was like, look, no matter what it is, we are going to win this game. And so I was impressed with that. You know, and the other thing is, yeah, we, you know, again, the 0-6 was horrendous. But, you know, overall, when you look at it, yeah, we did go 7-3 in our last 10 games. So, you know, we turned it around a little bit. And not too many teams is going to do that. You know, so I have to give this team a lot of credit for that. However, you know, by no means am I giving this team a pass for the inept play that we've had all year. I hated to see Eli go down yesterday. I mean, that was, you know, like you said, if there was a silver lining behind it, it was the fact that, okay, this was the last game and he has time to heal. But it was scary to see that when he got hit. And I don't want to beat up Will Beatty, man. I mean, I tell you right now, I really felt bad for Beatty yesterday. You know, he was up there trying to make a play. You know, I think he saved the team a turnover. One of the guys on the team was saying that as well, too. You know, it was a hustle play and everything that kind of got his leg broken. So I really feel sorry for Beatty. But that said, once again, that left side in line was horrendous with Beatty.
And it has to get fixed, Drew. We appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much, buddy.
All right.
Have a good one, man. And I think Drew makes great points. Right on the money.
You definitely need to address the offensive line, which has been said over and over again. And with respect to Drew's point about the passion, I would agree with him. I think down the stretch here, Tom Coughlin has got these guys to buy into that pride aspect, that there is still something to play for. And they showcase that specifically over these last 2 weeks, whether it be the victory in overtime against the Lions or against the Redskins, where mathematically there's really nothing to go out there. But guys embrace the opportunity to make a statement for themselves, make a statement for the team. And, you know, that's something that you could take with you into the offseason. season, and I think that the Giants can hang their hat on that, but there's clearly some heavy lifting that's going to have to be done. Pride can only get you so far.
And if you want to take a look at hashtag Giants chat, our buddy NYG Cap Central, at NYG Cap Central on Twitter, laid out a lot of scenarios in terms of the Giants and cap space. Like I mentioned earlier, right now they have about a $10 million under the cap difference, but they can free up a ton more space when they deal with Corey Webster's contract, Chris Knee's contract, Entre Roll's contract, and you can get upwards of, you know, 20 to 25, maybe even upwards of 30 if you didn't decide to deal with Eli Manning, a little more than that. So those are all things that the Giants can do to free up cap space. The bottom line, if they find the guy in free agency they really want, they'll have the resources to go out and get him.
And they did that, I remember, last offseason, John, where they cut Ahmad Bradshaw, they cut Michael Boley, and they cut Chris Canty. So they have done that in the past, where even though on paper right now it looks like they have some space, they can get some additional space if they make some decisions on current players on the roster.
And it is Black Monday in the NFL, obviously. A lot of head coaches losing their job. Rod Chudzinski, ever a big surprise, got fired by the Browns. Now, remember, he was not a hire of Mike Lombardi, who's now their general manager. So that probably a big thing to do with how that tenure only lasted 1 year. And now Dave from Rochester points out, NFL.com reporting Mike Shanahan has been fired by the Washington Redskins.
Well, the Redskins have made an official announcement on
that,
too.
Exactly, which is certainly not a surprise. That is to be expected.
There were issues all throughout the course of the season, specifically with the relationship and the quarterback and the owner and the head coach. So I don't think, like you said, it's a big, huge development. There will be a new coach within the division once again. We had it with Philadelphia last season, and Washington's going to be the team this season.
And it would appear that Dallas will be sticking with Jason Garrett unless something strange happens over the next week. We'll see if they do anything on the defensive side of the ball with Monty Kiffin if they decide to stay with that system for another year. And we'll keep an eye on those other jobs around the league as well, see who else gets fired or stays on. We'll keep that in mind as we move forward. Rex Ryan will return as head coach of the Jets, by the way.
The other one to note, and this is outside the division, the Vikings parted ways with Leslie Frazier. So Minnesota is going to head in a new direction with respect to their head coach.
That also not a surprise. And the Jim Schwartz watch, I'm sure, is on in Detroit as well. I would suspect that move will get made at some point today as well.
All eyes are definitely on Motown because based on what has happened in Detroit, I think Lions fans are itching for them to make a change.
Very talented team and not the type of results you would expect from a team with that type of talent. 201-939-4513. Ethan is in Maryland. Ethan, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ethan. How are you?
I'm good. So before I talk about the Giants, I just want to let you know that Miami is looking to fire Philbin, it looks like. I heard a report earlier.
Really?
Philbin and Ireland might be out.
Well, I could see Ireland going. He's had a rough go of it. I think Philbin's a good coach, but you know what? When you bring in a new GM, you like to have him pick a new head coach. So we'll see if Philbin
also
gets fired.
Mike Sherman as well could be out.
Their offensive coordinator. Though, you know, the offense, Ryan Tannehill's taken some huge strides this season, so I don't know how much blame you could put on the offensive coordinator.
And keep this in mind, too. They're playing with an offensive line that couldn't block Lance or I. So it's very hard to run a good offense when you have an offensive line that can't block anybody, as the Giants can attest to, by the way.
A lot of personnel issues on that team.
So with the Giants, I was looking at the free agents earlier from all of the NFL, and I think a guy they should take a look at is Alex Mack, you know, center from Cleveland. I think they should give him, you know, an offer because David Boss clearly could not play center this year, and I think he has to go, like most people say. Chris Knee has to go, you know, clear up the cap room. If you can sign Mac, that's a huge boost to your offensive line. And, you know, I just think they need a huge upgrade there. What's your feeling about Knicks? Because I've heard Knicks' opinions that he's meeting with the Giants next week. And, you know, I'm not quite sure what's going on with him.
Well, Akeem Knicks, when he spoke to the media on Friday, had as strong as a set of words as he's had since he's spoken to the media all year about his contract situation. And he really talked about how he wants to stay. He wants to make it happen. Now, here's the question. Is Nick saying this so when he leaves, the fan base doesn't hate him and they think, oh, he wanted to stay, but the Giants didn't want him? Or does he understand that maybe his value on the free agent market has been severely diminished by two subpar years, and he's willing to take his medicine, take a much smaller contract to stay with the Giants? So I'm not sure which one of those two are true. And quite frankly, this also has to be a two-way street. It's great that Knicks wants to be back. Do the Giants want him back the way he's played this year? And I think that's a question that has yet to be answered.
And for the coaching staff, if the Giants do go ahead and fire Gilbride, who do you see replacing him?
Well, I think they'll probably explore some options outside of the organization. I don't know if they would necessarily promote somebody, because if you're going to make a change, you want to bring in a new voice. It wouldn't make sense to bring somebody who's already been familiar with the system. If you're going to make a change on the coaching staff, I say you need to at least infuse new ideas, new creativity, if that's the direction that they go in. In terms of throwing a name out there, I mean, nobody necessarily jumps into mind. Before you look at who you want to bring in, Ethan, I think they need to determine what the identity of the offense is going to be and what type of personnel they bring in. For example, if you want to get back to that big passing game, then I think you look for an offensive coordinator who has helped turn a quarterback around. If you want to get back to a ground and pound game, then maybe you bring in a guy that has had a track record of really establishing a strong offensive line and using that as the launching pad to get the offense moving.
Right. And last thing quickly, what on the defensive side? I know they want to keep Beeson. I know they want to keep Tuck, or at least they say they do, and they want to extend Roll. Where do you start? You know, what do you start with first? Tuck, Beeson, or do you get rid of the players first? You know, if you're Jerry Reese, what do you do first?
I would try to extend Nontrell Roll first, to be honest with you, because I think that's an easy decision. He loves it here. He's played really well, and by extending him, you further resolve your salary cap situation. Then you know exactly how much you have to spend on guys like Tuck and Beeson. So I would make the move on Roll first. I talked to Justin, see at what number he would like to come back, and if you can get him back before he even hits the free agent market, I think that would be really a nice thing. My guess is that John Beeson will want to try to talk to other teams to see what else is out there before he re-signs. That's just my feeling. Same with Linval Joseph. But I would try to take care of a guy like Roll first, just because it also makes the salary cap picture a lot clearer.
Right. All right, and who's your biggest free agent to watch out for the Giants? Like, mine's Alex Mack. I think they should take a look at him.
I honestly think Alex Mack is a very good one. I think getting a guy in the middle of that offensive line that could communicate and get things done, he's one of those blue-collar type of guys, I think that's actually a really good name.
Though you can bring back Kevin Booth. Keep that in mind, Ethan, who can play center.
You can play him a guard, too.
I just think that they can maybe use a bigger playmaker at the interior offensive line. And I would
Is there such thing as a playmaker offensive line?
Well, I mean, I think there's a guy that can really make a statement in terms of run blocking and protection. So, I mean, you can go out and get some type of game changer.
Mac is a perennial Pro Bowl center. He's a very good player.
I just think that at the center spot, I'd rather keep somebody that has familiarity with Eli, and you don't necessarily have to shore that up. Then you bring in new guys in the inside who can work on the communication with your center.
I think what you do, you bring in the best player you possibly can, whether it's a guard and center, knowing that Booth can make the adjustment that he needs to make.
Well, the other thing that has to be determined, and Ethan touched on this, and I appreciate the phone call, Ethan, I don't know how easy or how simple it's going to be to, you know, do whatever they need to do in terms of David Boss's contract or what they want to do moving forward. So it's not as if David Boss is a free agent. Keep that in mind. You don't just get rid of him. So that could complicate matters as to where they want to go at the center spot. It's a little bit more manageable, I think, to bring in a guard, because you're going to lose a guard based on who you have as a free agent.
And we'll see if Christie ends up retiring as well.
And David Deal's a free agent. So you have holes.
And he might retire.
At guard, correct.
So we'll see what happens. 201-939-4513. Steve is in Washington, D.C. Steve, I know you're pretty happy the Giants beat your hometown Washington Redskins on Sunday.
Absolutely, man. I came in the office extra early today, man. It's fine up in here. Hey, Redskins fans, it's quiet. They ain't had nothing to say today, man. Listen, you know, Shanahan just got fired, so it's definitely a dark day for these guys. I'm going to leave them alone. But listen, you know, guys, I'm going to try to keep this positive today, you know, because I think we have some things to build off of. I'm glad we got the W, you know, 7 out of 10 on the way in. It's not a bad way to go. I just feel like, you know, we definitely can keep our heads up knowing that, you know, we can rebuild off of this next year. But a couple of things I wanted to address real quick is, number one, you know, just about the free agency. I definitely want to see Antoine Roll come back. You know, I saw a couple of interviews, you know, with Tuck and Beeson. And, you know, I certainly would like, you know, like I said last week, I'd like to keep Beeson, but I certainly don't want to break the bank for him at all. And I definitely don't want to break the bank for Justin Tuck. I'm just always leery when these guys are due for contracts. You know, I kind of really like to base, you know, what I think they deserve off of just, you know, 1 year, especially in their contract year. You know, I'm just one of those people who doesn't really think that Justin Tuck played too well the last couple of years. So, you know, with his age and what we've seen the last few years, and given the fact this is a free agency year, I'm just really not prepared to throw the bank at him. You know, I didn't really like the way his interview went personally. I like to read between the lines, you know. And as we've gotten closer towards the end of the season, they're just starting to sound less and less like they're committed to the Giants. Not so much as Tuck, but I'll tell you one thing. Beeson's interview yesterday, you know, he basically was like, oh, we'll see how it shakes out, you know, whatever. I know these guys are positioning themselves to get the, you know, the most money, and I can certainly respect that. But I just think, you know, with Beeson, with given his past health issues and the fact that, you know, he's a liability in the passing game. I've been saying that for the last couple of weeks. And it's not that he's not athletic. It's just his height alone. He's just not going to be a big-time, you know, threat in the passing game. So I hope we don't go overboard with that. I'd really like to see some, you know, some young talent personally. But for me, most alarming is this. I just don't know how we can fix the passing game. I don't think it's the receivers. I just don't. You know, yes, they could certainly be playing better, but I think a lot, you know, I think the offensive line is a bigger factor to that, you know, along with, you know, Eli's play. I just, you know, his decision-making, guys, and, I mean, you know, him throwing the ball with his back turned, he just looks too scared to me, just way too scared.
Well, Steven, that's why you have to fix the offensive line. If you fix the offensive line, you fix that problem.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean – yeah, but even when he has time, his decision-making is just not being – I mean, you could say it's because, you know, he's been banged up a lot this year, and he certainly has more than we can remember ever since he's been here. But, you know, I'm just – you know, I would really – hopefully he'll work on, you know, throwing on the run. You know, I mean, obviously we don't want him running, but, I mean, you know, a seven-step drop is just not always going to be feasible. So, you know, only person I'm going to say, I don't want to see him go – but I don't want to see him extended. I want Kildrive out of here on the first thing smoking. And, you know, what bothered me most yesterday about the game is 5 minutes to go, up 14 points. I think both Hillis and Brown, I think, either laid the ball down or almost laid the ball down. And I'm just wondering, why did we not give Michael Cox an opportunity to, you know, to get some experience? 5 minutes to go, up 14 points. The game, we wanted to win it, but it didn't mean that much. I just felt like, you know, it would have been, you know, extremely beneficial to have Michael Cox get some time. So I'd like to know you guys' feedback. Did anybody else think about that, or was it just me? You know, as far as, you know, give Michael Cox a little bit of time at the end of the game.
Steve, honestly, I think the organization knows Michael Cox is so far away from being ready to be an even productive running back or part-time running back in this league based on his knowledge of the system that they probably didn't think that they could learn that much about him by putting him out there. Same deal with Ryan Nassib, to be quite honest with you.
Michael Cox has had limited reps, Steve, but I think from the reps that he's had, as John touched on, they've already gone in the picture of what Michael Cox is going to be moving forward.
He's not ready yet.
So I don't really think you would have learned a great deal in the 5 minutes that you would have put him in that situation.
And quite frankly, if he had to block somebody, you might have gotten Curtis Painter killed, and who the heck are you playing a quarterback then?
Curtis Painter didn't really do too much.
They didn't ask him to do it. They handed it off. Curtis, here's the ball. Hand it to Peyton Hillis. Have fun.
Steve, as you know, they were dropping like flies yesterday. They were lucky that they still had a couple of guys to put on a uniform.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, hey, guys, you know, thanks for taking my call as usual, man. I'll be listening in, man, and hopefully I'll be able to touch base with you guys here, you know, at least once a week here. So, you know, I'll be looking forward to seeing what we do. I do believe in Reese. And, you know, I'm looking forward to next year, guys. So, great show. You know, wish we had a better year, but, you know, we'll be better next year, guys.
All right, Steve. Appreciate the call. Thanks so much. And I want to bring up one thing which you didn't mention. Andre Brown, he had another fumble, and that's 3 fumbles in 4 weeks for him. All 3 were lost. And if he wants to be in the mix to be the starting running back next year, he better clean that up. Because Tom Coughlin will not stand for that, and he got put right into the doghouse after he had that fumble in Week 17.
You did not see much more of Andre Brown moving forward in that contest. You saw a lot more of Peyton Hillis down the stretch of that contest. And
he has fumble problems, too.
Correct. And David Wilson, too. So I don't know if you have a running back on the roster right now, John, that does a great job of protecting the football.
And therefore, you can trust to be your every down back. Let's be honest.
These things weigh into the decisions that you make in the offseason.
Big time.
And Andre Brown's a free agent. Hillis is a free agent. David Wilson is a question mark with the neck injury. And we just went over Michael Cox. So the running back situation, I think, is going to change drastically this offseason.
I agree. And then look at Alfred Morris. He's a great running back. But he's had 9 fumbles now in his first 2 seasons in the league. 9.
Can't do that. Become a liability. And therefore, you're not a beneficial piece for the team.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Bruce in East Orange. Bruce, we haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on, bud?
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
Doing well, Bruce.
Listen, how's everything going, gentlemen? Good to hear from you.
Good to hear
from
you.
Bruce. How about yourself?
All right. The first thing I'd like to say is thank God we made it through this season, everybody. It was up, it was down, but the Giants came through in the end as far as the emotion is concerned, as far as their will for the game. I think as far as where we go from there, because as everybody said, you know, we have to address our offensive line. We definitely have to address that on all levels. My only question is, I'm amazed at how a team with Eli Manning could actually allow their offensive line to get so porous over that, let's say, a three-year period. It's amazing. It's like, you know, Eli is your engine, offensive engine. And you almost deserted him by what we put out there this year.
No, you're 100% correct. And Bruce, if there's one fair criticism you can have of this front office and of the coaching staff and everybody else in the organization, they did not do a good job of getting guys ready to play the offensive line position when some of the older guys either retired or got injured.
Oh yeah, it was absolutely horrible. And as far as running backs, they say in the NFL today, they say running backs are a dime a dozen. So, you know, there may be always somebody to pick up, maybe even cheaply, that can really get the job done if they had to. So, you know, I think that shouldn't be a problem.
Well, Bruce, I don't mean to cut you off. I think it depends on the system. When you say running backs, you can easily find. There are certain teams that have good systems where you plug in a guy all of a sudden and they thrive. And Washington is probably one team that has had a good track record. Denver, when Shanahan coached the team. The Giants, I don't know necessarily if that's that type of system where you just plug in anybody and they're going to thrive. But you're right. I think they can find another guy in the open market if they choose to go in that direction.
Absolutely. And defensively, I think Ferrell proved himself as a coordinator. And of course, you know, we all love Coughlin. I think they're safe and good to go. And there's really not a whole lot that really needs to be done. Maybe we could do a little tweaking at the linebacker spot here or there, and basically just, you know, just keep that ship running. Because I think defensively, for the most part, with all the problems we had. The defense, with not having a decent linebacker core at the beginning of the season, the defense, for the most part, really held up and saved our season.
Defense was very good against the run this season. That was a big issue last season, so they addressed that. They brought in a guy like Cullen Jenkins. They brought in Mike Patterson. Those guys turned out to be difference makers. But I think, as you pointed out, you need to make some changes and add depth, and appreciate the phone call, Bruce. Always good hearing from you, to that linebacker situation. Because Beeson's a free agent. Keith Rivers is a free agent. Jaquan Williams, I think, took a step back. I think most people thought he would be more of an impactful player.
He was just as inconsistent as he's been in the
so,
past.
Those are the three linebackers that started predominantly the entire season.
And Paysinger's a free agent.
I mean, you've got a lot of issues there. You've got a lot of holes. So that group is going to change. I would say heading into the offseason, John, the secondary is the one area, maybe outside of the corner lining up opposite Prince, where you're in the best shape at this point. You may not need to do huge type of lifting there compared to others.
You'll have to make some decisions at corner because Corey Webster is not going to be back. Aaron Ross is a free agent. Tremaine McBride, they'll have to make a decision on. Terrell Thomas, they have to make a decision on. Heck, they're only going to have, I think, Charles James and Prince of Mukamara, they're only two corners, and Hosley under contract for next year, so they have to figure out what they want to do in that regard.
Well, they were without Webster for the whole season, essentially.
Which is fine.
So I don't think they need to adjust there, and Ross got hurt early.
But only three corners under contract, you're going to have to add three, four, five guys.
You need to add definitely a starter who can line up opposite Prince if you don't think McBride can do that consistently for 16 games.
You also got to bring him back then, too.
Correct, because you want him to be your depth in the event the guy you bring it or Prince gets
right.
Hurt.
I don't think Hosley's shown you enough that he can be the starter on the opposite side quite yet.
I would agree. And Hosley also, I don't think, has provided enough game-changing plays on special teams.
And I'm going to try to preempt some calls, and Len will get to you in a second. Haven't any questions, surprisingly, about potential coaching changes going on, which if they do happen, they probably will happen at some point this week, probably by midweek, maybe a little bit later in the week, based on what Pat Hanlon told us yesterday in our pregame show interview on the radio. And to me, it's very hard to justify making a change of defensive coordinator based on how well the unit played this year. I mean, look, and here's the funny thing about it, and it's an opposite situation. The offense played poorly this year, but the track record of the offense has been excellent. The defense played well this year, but the track record of the defense before this season has not been very good. So I think it's going to be a tough decision by the coaching staff, meaning Tom Coughlin, speaking with Jerry Reese, speaking with John Maron, you know, Mr. Tisch, and the rest of the ownership group, and figuring out if they want to make a move in the coaching staff, which I don't think is a guarantee what they would do and if they would do it.
Well, they need to determine, is it a personnel issue or is it a scheme issue?
And or is it both? It could be a little bit of both.
Both factors could come into play. I would lean towards personnel issues that have led to the problems for the Giants this season, more so than this offensive coordinator should have made a better adjustment with respect to his scheme. Because Gilbride, listen, as much as Giants fans like to criticize him, and we talked about this a great deal throughout the season, they did make an effort to tweak the offense, given the offensive line issues.
Maybe not soon enough. But they did make changes, no question.
If you're going to criticize him, you're right. Maybe they waited too long, but they did make changes. It wasn't as if they stayed put the entire season.
Right, and look, maybe you have a position coach change here or there. You always have some coaching staff turnover from year to year. You know, defensive and offensive assistants takes jobs elsewhere. Guys move around. They get promoted to other teams. So who knows what's going to happen. But, again, I agree with you. When you diagnose what was wrong with this team this year, personnel is so much higher on the list, and it's not close as opposed to coaching, that I think it's going to be very tough for them to make those types of decisions.
And another factor that comes into play when they speak to Tom Coughlin, Jerry Reese, and John Mara, long-term Coughlin's plan, because that, I think, is going to dictate whether or not they make changes to the coaching staff. I mean, if Tom tells ownership, I'm looking at two more years, you know, maybe there's not necessarily the urgency to tweak, knowing that if they bring in a new head coach in 2 years, you're going to have to bring in new coordinators of how many different offenses and different defenses do you want to showcase these players. So that is going to be a conversation that they need to have. They need to get a better idea, Tom Coughlin's long-term future here. How many more years does he want to head this team before he decides to hang it up? Because remember, he's approaching 70 years old, and you don't see many coaches stay on the sidelines past that age.
201-939-4513. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, how was let me ask, Len, were you one of the brave few fans that made it out to the game yesterday and braved the conditions and sat out there the entire time?
Guys, I have to be honest. I didn't make the game.
Oh, wow. That is huge.
That is stunning.
Yeah. I didn't make the game. Number of circumstances, but the bottom line, let's go right to the bottom line. The bottom line is I didn't get to the game. Well, hey, look, you guys are being a little optimistic this morning. Listen, I'm glad we won yesterday. 7-9 is better than 6-10.
I think we're being honest, Len. I don't think we're being overly optimistic.
Well, I hope not, because the holes are just numerous and glaring, particularly on the offense. Len,
we aren't trying to sugarcoat this. They're going to need 4 to 5 new starters on offense next year. There's no question about it, and that's considered major change in terms of personnel. We agree with you 100%.
And let's remember that. I agree. Let's remember this. And, Lance, I want to go back to something you said right at the start of the show when you said, you know what, the Giants are not going to overpay. You want Alex Mack to be your center? You're going to have to overpay.
Yeah, by the way, the Browns have about $30 million of cap space, too, so they're going to have money to re-sign him if they want him.
Well, it's not just because of that. In today's NFL, well, that's a big part of it, no question, but in today's NFL, you want that difference maker? You're going to have to overpay.
No, you're right about that. In free agency, you have to pay a lot of money for these star
but
players.
But, Len, I would also argue that the teams that consistently make the playoffs, look at the teams in the playoff picture this year, are not teams that necessarily overpaid for one guy. They did most of their job during the draft and maybe rounded out their roster with a playmaker here or there. Look at New England. Look at Carolina. These teams didn't break open the piggy bank for one guy. So I don't think that's the best plan.
Now, there are ways to do it right, though, because, Len, the Giants have done it right in the past, and they had their class, so they brought in a Michael Boley, they brought in an Anshar Roll, they brought in a Chris Canty. Those guys helped the Giants win a Super Bowl. So if you do it the right way, it can work to a certain extent.
Okay, let me ask you this. It took 10 wins to win the division.
Yeah.
And it went down to the last game of the season to get to that 10 wins to win the decision. To win the division. You see the Giants getting to 10 wins?
Next year?
Next year?
I mean,
next year?
It's hard to judge, Len. I don't know.
Or is this a two-year, three-year process?
I don't know who's going to be on this roster next year. Show me the roster, and I'll try to give you a better answer.
Well, let me ask you this then, and going in another direction. 24 unrestricted free agents.
Right.
Lance, any difference makers in those 24?
Of the guys that are on the team that are going to be free agents.
Don't tell me about filling in with, you know, Terrell. I like Terrell, all right? And filling in with Ryan Mundy and...
Hakeem Nicks has been a difference maker.
And re-signing the backup quarterback. You know, if you equate dollars with ability, is there any backup quarterback in the NFL who makes less money than Curtis Painter?
Well, Hakeem, in fairness, Hakeem Nicks has been a difference maker in the past year at wide receiver. He's one of the reasons they won a Super Bowl. Justin Tuck has been a difference maker this year. John Beeson has been a difference maker this year. So there are three or four guys here that are legitimate difference makers that the Giants will have to make decisions on. And Linville Joseph, too, by the way. That's four.
Yeah, all right. I want to say something about Joseph. I want to retract something I said the other day. In Linville's favor, by the way, I really want to say something about Linville. I want Beeson back. I want Linville back. I'm not so sure about Hakeem. You know, are you tired of seeing wide receivers going one direction and the ball going the other? There was the one play yesterday where Hakeem stopped and Eli threw the ball down the center of the field. Are you tired of seeing that?
Yeah, I think all Giant fans are.
Not necessarily with just Hakeem.
No, Reuben Randall. It happens more often than it should.
All right. We need to take a look at what's causing that. You know, maybe this options off the route tree ain't working.
Yeah, but Len, Hakeem Nicks stopping and giving up on a route has nothing to do with an option tree on the route. Hakeem Nicks gave up.
All right, see, I had a little different take on that. I don't think he gave up. I think he thought in reading the tree, in reading his options off the route tree, that that's what he was supposed to do, and Eli would read it that way.
I don't know the answer to that question either.
Okay, I don't know the answer either, but that was my perception of the situation. And I thought to myself, time and time again, well, we're seeing these guys run, and we keep saying it's wrong routes or Eli's making a bad pass. Hey, look, if these guys can't figure it out, go back to the playground, count five steps, and cut toward the Pontiac, and I'll throw you the ball. I mean, if it's too hard for them to figure out, that's where I'm going with. I don't want to say anything else about coaching. I mean, maybe we just got to change this whole sophisticated passing game that we should. And I mean, it's almost like the other teams are figuring. Have you ever seen receivers I'm only watching the Giants this closely, but as contested as Giants receivers are? I mean, Eli's trying to force the ball in there all the time, and I'm not blaming Eli. Listen, eventually you got to throw the ball, guys. The guy's covered. You got to try to make something happen. You can't have 87 sacks in a season. You got to try to make something happen. I'm not absolving Eli. I'm just saying, sometimes when you see the ball, you know, and you say, why did he throw it to that guy? There's two guys there. It always seems there's somebody covering our guys closely. I mean, you almost get it like the other teams have figured this out.
Well, that also reflects on the lack of separation that the receivers are getting against the secondary line.
Yeah, well.
I mean, that sometimes is just one-on-one ability more so than the system.
Well, but you're not absolving the system, are you?
No, I'm not necessarily absolving the system, but I don't think that it's just the system that has led to some of the offensive issues. For example, look at yesterday's game. How many times did Lewis Murphy get a ball that bounced off his shoulder pads? You know, I mean, is that because of the system, or is that because Lewis Murphy's just not a very good wide receiver?
and the young receiver tally, he had one go right through his hand.
Correct.
And the same, but there's a lot of times where, I mean, we're getting contested, particularly, you know, we got to get to 10 wins. I mean, we got to match Philadelphia. How do we get to 10 wins? You know, if you go down the division, and we can't do all the positions, but just let me take left tackle, and maybe this is the most glaring. You got Trent Williams in Washington. You got Peters in Philadelphia. You got Tryon Smith in Dallas. Where does our left tackle performance rate in terms of those three guys? We're fourth. We're fourth at center. We're fourth at tight end. We're fourth at running back. Maybe even at quarterback. We didn't have a great year at a quarterback. you want to go wide receiver, number one wide receiver? We're fourth. I mean, we have really fallen. How do we get to 10 wins? It's going to have to be huge changes. Getting to 10 wins is not on the team. Look at running back. Our starting running back next year isn't on this team. He's not on the team, in my estimation. I mean, the holes are numerous and glaring. There's a lot of work. I don't know if we can get this done in 1 year.
Well, but Len, you know, you're caught up with the whole thing about 10 wins. And listen, I'm not going to try to paint a very optimistic picture, and I'm not saying that this season went well, but you clear up some of the turnovers. I mean, they could have potentially even gotten into 10 wins this season. And maybe that's a ridiculous statement, but look at back at some of these losses, Len, and you don't give away the football. I mean, you could have turned some of these L's into W's. It's not as if all of these losses were lopsided. So even as bad as this season is, you say it looks like 10 wins is miles and miles away. I don't necessarily see it as miles and miles away, because I think part of the issues was the fact that there were a lot of mental lapses and careless football, more so than just not having good personnel. I mean, look at how many interceptions Eli Manning's thrown. It's more so than he's thrown any other season.
Yeah. Now, well, you know the old saying, if ifs and buts were nuts and sugar, oh, what a rich boy I'd be. I mean, you were playing ifs and buts. We're 7-9, guys, and probably lucky. If you had told me we were going to be 7-9 after going 0-6, I don't care who the opposing quarterbacks were, I don't care who we were playing, where we were playing them. If you had told me we were going to be 7-9 at the end of the season after going 0-6, I would have said you're crazy. A testament to the coaching staff and to the leadership on the team and the guys who yesterday were better men than I was, because they were willing to pull that blue jersey on and go out there and play hard for 60 minutes. And I was proud of them yesterday. Let me retract something I said about Linville, which may have sounded negative last week when we were talking about who might sign Linville. And I was breaking it down to 4-3 teams versus 3-4 teams. And I said our competition is really only the 4-3 teams, not the 3-4, because Linville can't play in that. I went back to one of my old draft guys from Linville's rookie year. And interestingly enough, at East Carolina, he played nose tackle. And it was thought that perhaps his best position in the pros might have been nose tackle. That he's got the kind of body, big boned, heavy-set guy that he can handle the middle of that line, probably more than Barry Cofield could. I'm not big on Cofield as a nose tackle. They also suggested that Linville might be able to slide outside in a 3-4. So, listen, I want to retract what I said about Linville. He's probably got 32 teams who will look at him, not just 16. He's been a great player, a terrific player for the Giants. I hope we can keep him. And I wanted to make sure I got to retract that statement, because I was clearly wrong about whether Linville could play inside in the 3-4. And all the draft gurus thought that he could, and that was probably going to be his best position.
Well, and Len, the other thing that you brought up with Linville when we talked in prior weeks was you asked, did he make any game-changing plays?
Yeah.
And it's hard
yeah.
to look at game-changing plays, I'll give you that, but you take him out of the equation, are they able to stop the run as effectively as they did this season?
Yeah.
You know, that's a big
yeah.
issue. And he's yeah. done quietly, yeah. he's been very effective.
Yeah. Yes, but you see what you just said, and this gets back to something that Lance said, and then I'll let you guys go. You're keeping me on too long anyway. But see what you said? He's part of an equation. Lance wants game changers. I want game changers. We got nobody in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, but that's blown out of proportion.
I know. I knew that's where you were going to go. But the bottom line is we got nobody in the Pro Bowl. Those are supposed to be the best players in the game. Yeah, you know, maybe Linville should have snuck, not Linville, Antrell should have snuck in there. Yeah. But you know me with star power. I want stars. I want a couple of stars. I want guys who are going to get to the Pro Bowl. Linville is part of an equation, yes. But, we're back to what, you know, you can't overpay Linville. You got to go for guys who are difference makers. And you know, let's hope. And I think it's through the draft. And as somebody said, I think it was you, John, you know, you fill in with free agency. Hey, listen, I'm proud of the team. I'm sorry it went the way it went. I'm sorry there's not a game next week. Listen, I just checked my calendar. January's got 55 days in it. It's going to seem like that anyway, trying to get through January in these playoffs, another miserable January. We got to get back to the playoffs, guys. Come on, Jerry, fix it.
All right, Len.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Thanks so much for the phone call. And now, I did throw out game changers, and I've used that term more often than not over the last few weeks because you want a guy that you could point to each and every game who gives you a chance to really turn things in your favor. But it also gets back to the finances, and I think you can get game changers in the draft. Look at the teams that made the playoffs this season. Not every team went out and went on a spending spree. The Seattle Seahawks are a team that has a bunch of game changers. All those guys came through the draft. New England has built somewhat of a dynasty because they've been able to get to the playoffs each and every year, but it hasn't been necessarily because they've been bringing in big-name free agents. You can't get caught up in big names. Big names don't always translate to the football field. You just have to make wise investments, and you hope that you get a good return. And I think that that can be done with a perfect balance between drafting guys through the third and seventh round and also rounding out your roster with free agents. But the reason why you need to weigh the economics is because if you think Linval Joseph is that valuable, you think guys like Justin Tucker that valuable, hey, throw all the money you want at them, but then you're going to realize, you're going to come to the conclusion, so we've kept the defense together. Well, defense is one of the strengths of this team right now, but what are we going to do? How much more money are we going to have to actually go out and shore up the offense? That's why finances weighs heavily on decisions that teams make. In an ideal world, you'd love to keep everybody, but in the world of the salary cap, you're limited in terms of how much money you can delegate towards a certain player. So I think that's why the Giants will have to let some guys walk, and they'll be able to keep some guys. And we've seen that in prior seasons. You can't keep everybody. You just need to keep the guys who you think are going to be able to be consistent. And then you need to take into consideration age, how many more years, what they have left in the tank. A lot of questions that have to be thrown around in all the meetings heading over the next couple of weeks. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Roldy in Bayshore, New York. Roldy, what's happening?
Good morning, you guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Roldy. How about yourself?
Good. Very happy about the win, you know, to close out the season, even though we're not, you know, moving forward to the playoffs. But over and all, 7-3, I'm happy that, you know, they won it for pride. Now, I read somewhere that, you know, the Giants might be looking at, you know, cornerback Vontae Davis from the Colts. You know, guys like the backup running back from Minnesota. I don't know his last name.
Toby Gerhardt, you're talking about.
Yeah, him and Wesley Woodyard. I don't know. How true is that? I mean, would the Giants have enough money to get, you know, draft, you know, two or three of those guys?
Well, it's all speculation at this point. I mean, it's so early in the game. You're going to hear tons of rumors as we move closer to the offseason. I think everybody's an option at this point, depending on how high the Giants value those guys. You know, Gerhardt's a guy that's backed up Adrian Peterson since he came in the league. He came over from Stanford, a good, solid program, had a very successful collegiate career. You know, I think the Giants would have to weigh, can he handle 20 to 25 carries a game? Is he good in pass protection? Is he a good fit for the system? But that would be one guy that's going to be out there. I looked over the running backs that are going to be able to test the market. There's not a lot of big names. I mean, Donald Brown of the Colts, LeGarrette Blount of the Patriots. There's some playmakers, but I wouldn't say there's a guy that necessarily jumps off the page. However, if they're a good fit for the system, but they've got to be able to pass protect. That's the bottom line, Roldy. You can name off tons of running backs. If they can't pass protect, there's no point to bringing them here.
Right. And I agree with you earlier, what you were saying earlier, Lance, about, you know, it's all going to come down, far as coaching-wise, you know, what Tom Coughlin's, you know, plans are. You know, maybe it's 2 years. There's no way I feel like he's going to make a change, you know, to his offensive line, offensive coach, you know, with only 2 years. Fuel, you know, did an okay job, you know. If anything, if any coach that I would want, you know, to start and have a new coach would be the defensive line. And if they were to fire Perry Fuel, what's the chances of Spags coming back? And that's pretty much what I have. I'm happy about the Giants win. I'm excited, you know that they finished 7-3. Hopefully next year we could be a dominant force to be reckoned with. We make some good moves this offseason, get back to what we're used to, you know, get a good solid running back, have a great defensive line and offensive line, just, you know, being solid. And that's pretty much what I have.
All right, Roldy, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And Roldy threw out Spags, who clearly was with the team when they were able to get to the quarterback consistently each and every year. He was a consultant with the Baltimore Ravens this past season, so I'm sure he's looking to get back into coaching. And anything's a possibility. I think that they'll explore all their options when it's all said and done this offseason. I mean, right now it's pure speculation as to whether or not they'd look at this coach, they'd look at this player. Considering, though, he has familiarity with the system, I wouldn't put it past the Giants if they would look into that direction. Another guy that I'll throw out, and once again, this is also pure speculation, if Tampa Bay makes a coaching change, let's say, hypothetically, and they clean house with Greg Schiano and company, who was Tampa Bay's offensive coordinator? Mike Sullivan. Mike Sullivan was a former Giants quarterbacks coach who helped Eli Manning put up quality numbers. Could they look at possibly bringing him back within the organization? Guys who know the system have worked with the personnel. I don't think the Giants would overlook that. But once again, that's pure speculation. I mean, right now, they've got to determine whether or not they want to make a change. And I don't think you make a change for the sake of making a change. You make a change because you think that new voices will help get the players back to perform at a very high level. And that's something that they're going to have to weigh over the next few weeks. One other point I want to piggyback off of, and this gets back to what Len said before we get back to some of the remaining calls. And Saraceno at SJS0816 poses the question, how did Miami do with all the big names they paid for this offseason? I think that's a great point because Len kept saying, I want game changers, I want big names. And I think the average fan gets caught up with the whole big name situation. And let's use Miami as an example. And that's why I liked what Saraceno brought up. The Dolphins brought in Mike Wallace from the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think Wallace has had a decent season. I wouldn't say it was an explosive season. I don't think he put up the numbers that they were anticipating. Gave him a lot of money. That's why Pittsburgh was able to let him walk. They felt that he wasn't necessarily worth that. They brought in Dustin Keller. Dustin Keller couldn't contribute this season because he tore his ACL in the preseason. They did not bring in game changers on the offensive line. They let Jake Long walk. And clearly they didn't have enough depth. And on defense, they brought in a player here or there. LRB from the Baltimore Ravens, I think, turned out to be a good signing. But defense wasn't their issue. If you look at offense alone, they brought in what Len would call name commodities. They didn't necessarily get good return out of those name commodities. So you got to be careful. There's not a lot of teams that you could point to that went for the home run. They went for all the big names. The Washington Redskins in past years. Remember Dan Snyder? He'd bring in all those big names, Deion Sanders and so forth, Albert Haynesworth. You know, what type of results did that yield the way of Washington? Big names is not the direction to go to. Players that fit the system is the best direction to go to, and good draft picks. Teams that get to the playoffs consistently are the ones that get that young nucleus and they're able to keep them around. Because remember, when you draft a guy, you're looking at a good 4 years with him under that rookie contract. Whereas if you bring in a free agent, you sign him to a 1 or 2 year deal, in another 2 years, you're going to have more turnover. The only way to build consistency is you keep the group together. And the Giants were able to do that in previous years. The reason why all of a sudden there's been some inconsistency is they've signed some guys to one-year contracts. And the reason they had to do that is because they tied up a lot of money in some of their other quote-unquote big-name commodities. And the returns haven't been there enough over the last few years. Let's head back to the lines. And we've got Andrew in New Jersey. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Role is a definite. And he's probably the best defensive player, even though he blew the Dallas game at the end, but he's not a corner, he's a safety. And a lot of, pass rushers get a lot of attention, more so than the defensive backs, unless it's like Deion Sanders type, like you mentioned. But I want Roll, Hillis, Beeson, definitely back. And the roster is probably, like you said, good enough to win 10 games. And if you would have said before the season, you're going to have your third-string center, you have the high-price center. He gets in, the free agent guy. He gets in injured. Then the backup comes in, who's pretty good. He gets injured, and you're, shuffling the offense of line. And then you're on your fifth-string running back. So, the roster is not at all far away, and the future, I say, looks bright because. And one quick about the Pro Bowl, I think Roll's good enough, but all the defensive tackles are near Pro Bowl caliber, but none of them play full-time. They rotate in and out. But the defensive tackles, and that goes to my point why the future looks bright, because last year they were weak against the run, which was uncharacteristic, and then they completely turned it around, and they had an excellent run defense, one of the best in the league. And it's actually even better than it appears because yesterday they shut Washington out, the defense. Washington only scored on field goals off turnovers, they didn't actually even get a first down. So it was really a shutout that the defense pitched. So I'm very, optimistic that they're going to sign the right free agents and draft offensive linemen. And if they can stay healthy, they'll be a definitely improved offensive line. And I just want to say the overall season, of course, the 6-0 is disappointing, but the strong finish last year was much more disappointing because the replacement refs, when they blew the call, remember that at the Seattle-Green Bay game?
On Monday Night Football.
Yep. What happened was they said if they would have called it right, Green Bay would have won, and instead of Seattle going to the playoffs, the Giants would have went. Giants were 9-7 the year before. They won the Super Bowl at 9-7, and they beat Seattle in the regular season, blew them out. They blew out the 49ers, and they beat San Francisco easily. So all three teams were in the playoffs. So last year was like more disappointing in that sense because you're seeing playoff teams in the playoffs that the Giants handily beat. And that's what Eli Manning said, that it was, like odd because that they improved in some ways. He said that they didn't just squeak by the 49ers in the playoffs.
Well, last year, Andrew, they also got off to a very good start. So I think that the fan base was optimistic that it would carry through the rest of the season. So I can understand why last season was more of a disappointment. This year, when you get off to an 0-6 start, all of a sudden expectations are very low. That's why a number of you have said it's amazing that they even got back to 7-9, given how much they struggled earlier this year.
Exactly. So last year, the defense, uncharacteristically, the run defense wasn't good, but the offense was better. Now it was the reverse, the offensive line. So I think they'll do better. And I have my final two comments or two jokes. One, who would be the perfect complement wide receiver for Knicks? Because Knicks hasn't scored a touchdown. So what wide receiver who's now a broadcaster, Hall of Famer, who is the opposite, like the polar opposite of Knicks?
You mean the guy that gets in the end zone 99% of the time?
Yes, is known for just getting in the end zone.
Well, there's a lot of guys that are in television who I know have been able to get in the end zone, so you got to throw me a name here. I can list a number of wide receivers.
Rex Ryan's dad came up with an infamous quote about this wide receiver. He coached, Buddy Ryan coached him, and he came up with like a famous quote about the wide receiver.
Okay, I'm a little lost this morning, Andrew. You got to help me out. Who are we Chris, going at?
Chris Carter.
Okay.
Because they said all Chris Carter does is catch touchdowns, so he would be like the polar opposite of Hakeem Nicks, because he just catches touchdowns. That was actually a knock. Buddy Ryan was saying that, as a knock, that he can't do anything other than catch touchdowns. So it became like a infamous. You remember that quote?
I do now remember that quote. Correct. Yeah. Well, the bottom line is, though, Chris Carter's hung up the jersey. So, I mean, if the Giants need somebody to save their season, it's not going to be Chris Carter, though.
No, I was just joking because it was the opposite, where Hakeem Nicks was, moving the ball up and down the field but not getting in the end zone. And they say Chris Carter could never catch anything, up and down the field. It was only fades, jump balls in the end zone. But for Victor Cruz, he could have his final, his chunky soup commercial where the mom offers him the chunky soup at inappropriate times, but it's too delicious to resist. In the meeting room, she busts in, offers him the soup on the practice field, and he's like, Mom, you can't give it to me on the practice field. But he's like, okay, because it's too good to resist. So then even during the game on the field, the Dallas game, she hands him the soup, runs up, hands him the soup on the field, but the Dallas Cowboys, four or five of them, surround Cruz, grab the soup and run into the end zone and eat the soup in the end zone, which is, symbolic when they stripped Cruz in the Dallas game. They ran for the touchdown. But I'll let you go on that one, and my dad will bail me out.
All right, Andrew. Andrew Sr. now stepping up to the plate.
Okay, let me just say thank you for all the information you imparted on us all these months. I'm glad they won their last two games because it'll show that they do have heart, and it'll give the Giants a chance to sort out who's a playmaker and who's there just collecting a salary. Speaking of salary, when they signed the offensive tackle, the left side, to the three-year contract, is there probably a clause in there where they can have to pay him guaranteed money or something?
Well, normally the majority of these contracts have certain timetables in terms of when they owe them a specific amount of guaranteed money. I don't know the specifics with regard to Will Beatty's contract. I'm sure there is some specifics in which they've been laid out. I mean, they can renegotiate contracts. There's options open, but if you're looking for ways to just cut ties with Will Beatty, I would say that's very unlikely to happen.
Okay. Thank you for taking our calls. We'll see you again next year.
You got Bye-bye. It. All right. Appreciate hearing from the pair of Andrews, as we do more often than not on Giants.com here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Take a few more phone calls before we wrap things up this morning. One other thing I wanted to piggyback off of, and Andrew Jr. brought it up, about the fact that they were able to really get back to that type of defense this season, which was very stingy against the run. And how did they do that? Well, they brought in free agents, but they didn't necessarily bring in, you know, big names. Cullen Jenkins, I don't necessarily consider a big name. I mean, I think he's a veteran player who has been successful in certain systems, but I wouldn't necessarily put him up there in the Hall of Fame type of category. And they didn't necessarily open up the piggy bank for him. They brought in Mike Patterson. They re-signed Sean Rogers. And all of a sudden, the run game improved. So, you know, that's another example where if they make good decisions, I think they can elevate their play, specifically on offense, because that's probably the more glaring need than on defense. So that doesn't mean that they need to bring in a big-time running back. That doesn't mean they need to bring in a big-time wide receiver if Akeem Nicks leaves to complement Victor Cruz. They just need to bring in guys that are going to meet the necessary requirements to thrive in this system and do the things that they need the most help in. So if you can get a good run stopper and you don't have to throw a great deal of money at him, that could turn out to be a very good move, assuming he gels well with the other personnel. Or you bring in a guy that you can draft who is very similar to how you can see them fit in the system. You need a guy that can run through the hole and pass protect, then draft a guy like that. You know, David Wilson was not that guy. And that's why I think they've had some issues in that category. You need to draft for need, but it also needs to be a guy that can fit your system. You know, it's very difficult to find the balance between both of those situations, and I think the Giants have slowly learned that over the last few seasons. But if you think that heading into this offseason, all of their needs are going to be met from picking up a free agent here or there, you know, that's living in fantasy world. They're going to have to get some big-time players through the draft. It eventually has to happen. You can't keep going on season in and season out where you draft decently in rounds 1 and 2 and you just flip a coin in rounds 3 through 7. That has to change. A lot of the guys who have spent, we're talking about a decade with this team, some of them have been in the late rounds. You know, David Deal, who talked about that in the locker room yesterday. Late round pick. He wasn't a first or second round pick. You've got to be able to do a lot of your heavy lifting there. And that has to change. Let's try to squeeze in another call or two. We go to Kevin in Maryland. Kevin, what's happening?
Hi, good morning.
How we doing, Kevin? What you got?
Yeah, just a quick question. What's your thought on perhaps new assistant coaches to help out Coach Tom Coughlin? There's a lot of talent on this Giants team, a lot of youth, but it seems like a lot of plays are just mediocre, the same old, same old. So just what's your thought on that? And I believe the Giants did well, of course, in closing out the season. Definitely look forward to next year. But again, what's your thought?
Well, I think that they'll evaluate the coaching staff in this next week. And Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese, I'm sure, will address those type of discussions when they address the media a little bit later today. You can stay locked to Giants.com for that. I don't know if there's going to be, though, drastic changes. Maybe a few weeks ago I would have thought that they could resurrect this coaching staff, but based on how the defense finished up and how consistent it played down the stretch, I would be surprised if they determined that they wanted to go in a different direction. And the offense has had its fair share of ups and downs, but the way to evaluate Kevin Gilbride, you need to determine, was it Gilbride's scheme or was it the personnel that he had to utilize? And I would lean more towards the lack of the personnel, as you mentioned, Kevin, because you pointed out the fact that there's a lot of players on this roster that you need to hone their skills. But sometimes it's hard to do that during the course of a few weeks. You need an entire offseason to do that. So I think you're right. They do need to develop the personnel, but I don't know if that's because they don't have the current coaching staff in place. I think it's the desire of the players and the fact that some of the players are just not NFL ready, which speaks volumes about some of the decisions they made in the draft. So I would say that they may make a tweak at a positional coach here or there. I don't think, though, they're going to do huge differences in terms of the coordinator spots.
I got you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right, Kevin.
Of course. Okay, then you take it.
You got it. Thanks so much for the phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Certainly appreciate everybody weighing in this morning. As I mentioned, a lot of press conference coming your way throughout the course of the day. Jerry Reese, Tom Coughlin, and the players will be cleaning out their lockers, so you'll get a lot of feedback and analysis from the organization. And then the rest of the week, they'll slowly start to head into off-season mode where they'll have to make decisions with respect to the coaching staff, and they'll have to start to evaluate all the talent on this roster to determine who they're going to keep, who they're going to part ways with, and then that will also dictate what they do in the draft, which will be coming a little bit later than usual in 2014. But the big decisions will start to move forward over the course of the next few days and the next few weeks, and then we'll have a better idea what type of direction the Giants are going to have to go in. But remember, I get back to the big point that we talked about throughout the course of this show. The Giants will have to make some splashes in free agency, but you just don't make a splash for the sake of making a splash. And that means that you don't just look at the biggest name on the market and say, wow, this is going to get the fan base excited, so we're going to throw X amount of dollars this way, and then that's all of a sudden going to change the team, because that doesn't necessarily always work out that way. So they need to spend some money, they need to draft better, and you assume with that balance, making smart decisions in which players fit into the system, you know, they'll be able to turn things around. And as I pointed out earlier in the show, they clean up the turnovers this season. And the turnovers were through the roof. The numbers, it is hard to even make sense of these numbers. 44 giveaways this season. 29 takeaways. We're talking about a minus 15 turnover differential. They were plus 14 last season. And that's a huge 180. It's hard to win games. Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles did the complete reverse, and that's why those two teams were in a position to win the NFC East this year, and the Redskins and the Giants, who went backwards in the turnover differential department, were not in the playoff picture. Turnover differential is probably the one statistic that dictates the success of a team, and that's a big reason why the Giants took a step back from previous years. But if we're going to look at 10 wins as the barometer to get to win the NFC East, I don't think the Giants are as far away from 10 wins as many people make them out to be. Because you look through the schedule this season, and I know we could play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game. The week one Dallas game, they could have turned into a W. They had 6 turnovers in that game. And despite the 6 turnovers, remember, they were still in a position to win that contest. Denver, legitimate loss. Carolina, legitimate loss. Kansas City, they were in that game early. But they had breakdowns also in special teams. Wasn't so much the turnovers. The second Philadelphia game was a highly contested game. Nick Foles then took advantage down the air. Chicago could have been a win. Remember that final drive, Eli Manning, another interception. And then you look at the second Dallas game. They get a defensive stop. Perhaps the offense again in position to tie the game or potentially win the game. San Diego and Seattle were legitimate losses. They were a handful of legitimate losses. I'm not saying here that, you know, all of these losses could have easily been turned into W's. However, I could point to at least 3 of the losses this season. 3 of the 9 that could have went the other way. And that's the difference between being a 7-9 team and being a 10-6 team. And if we're talking 10-6, we're talking about potentially being in the playoff conversation despite how up and down this season turned out. So I think that the Giants are not that far away. They need to clean up the issues that plagued this team. And turnovers with Eli Manning was through the roof this season. He had never had this many turnovers. He had never dealt with such a bad offensive line that failed to pass protect. You clean those two things up. Not saying that the Giants are going to become a powerhouse in the NFL, but they're going to get to a point where they are going to be consistent. And that's what you need in order to at least put yourself in a position to win football games and be in the conversation of the playoffs. They can get there. I don't think they have to get there by breaking open the piggy bank. They just need to make wise investments, and they need to get better return on these draft picks, because I'm sure the Giants fan base is tired of talking about guys with potential and this and that, and how Adrian Robinson is the JPP of tight ends. You know, I'm the type of person, it's all about what have you done for me lately. Show me. Talk is cheap. And I think that the Giants are looking at it from that perspective. Enough talking, enough saying that this guy's going to pan out. These guys have to start showing it. And that's why, if they can't do it, they're not going to be on the 53-man roster. If they can, then there's going to be a spot for them. 201-939-4513, the telephone number. Keep that number handy. We'll be taking your phone calls the rest of the week here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, which comes your way each and every morning at 9:30. Appreciate the feedback and the interaction through Twitter. We'll try to get to some of your tweets off the air as we move forward today, and appreciate all the phone calls. So stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest news. Jerry Reese, Tom Coughlin with press conferences later today, and the players will also provide some feedback as they clean out their lockers. For John Schmelke, I'm Lance Meadows, signing off here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you again tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a good one.